Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is continuing courtroom coverage in the trial of James Crumbly from the Hidden Killers podcast from True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
Microphone?
Yeah. Yeah, can you turn off the microphone? Your Honor, calling People v. James Crumbly, case number 22279989FH.
Good morning.
Thank you, Marquis, and guest people.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mario Lehman on behalf of James Crumbly, who is standing to my left.
Good morning. Can you hear us, Mr. Crumbly?
I can. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. We're going to bring the jury in, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Are you trying to turn this on? Are you wanting this on?
I might need it on, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. Oh, I just have a weird flashing in this one, so I didn't know if somebody was attempting to turn it on.
I didn't try anything on here. Yeah, that's I don't
know. All rise for the jury. The testimony you're about to give is a true self-affidavit.
Yes, ma'am.
Great. You can be seated, and would you then state your name for the record and spell your first and last name, please?
Edward Wagrowski, E-D-W-A-R-D, last name W-A-G-R-O-W-S-K-I.
Ms.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you, ma'am?
I'm well, thank you. I may or may not use the screen, so I might bring up a paper exhibit to you if I need to.
Yeah, this one doesn't appear to be. Something's going on.
The issue I mentioned to you a minute ago, this screen is flashing.
You know what, Your Honor, why don't you turn it off? I have the exhibits printed out, so if I need Mr. Wagrowski to look at it, I can walk it up to him.
Right. You can let our IT know.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Wagrowski, in November of 2021, you were employed by the Oakland County Sheriff's Office.
Yes, that's correct.
And you were employed in their computer crimes division.
Correct.
You testified yesterday that the main objective of your position was to obtain evidence for criminal prosecutions.
I'm sorry, the main objective of my...
of your position was to obtain evidence against someone accused of a crime.
On that day of November 30th?
No. As your role with the Computer Crimes Division.
We were looking for evidence if a crime was committed, yes.
And you reviewed electronics?
Correct.
Social media accounts?
That's correct.
Other similar sources of electronic data?
Correct.
And the goal was to obtain evidence against a person accused of a crime, is that fair?
Attempting to see if a crime was committed, correct.
Your goal was not to obtain any exculpatory information that would clear someone from a crime. You were looking to see if somebody committed a crime, is that correct?
That's not true. No, if we find evidence like that, obviously it would be relevant to look further into that, yes.
And you did the same thing in this case. You reviewed the electronics, the social media accounts, and other sources of electronic data.
Correct.
You reviewed cell phones that belonged to James Crumbly?
That's correct.
You identified that there were 3 cell phones, if I recall correctly, from the prosecution's PowerPoint.
Correct.
2 of them had the same phone number.
That is correct.
So there were 2 Android phones that had the same phone number.
Correct.
And then there was a 3rd phone, which you called a burner phone. Or, I'm sorry, excuse me. The prosecution called it a burner phone and you agreed.
Correct.
That's a phone that you buy at, I think you said, Walmart or Meijer or a store like that. A track phone, something along those lines.
Correct, yes. Something that's, you can just buy and activate yourself.
And if you know, James Crumbly and his wife were told to get a second phone because they gave their phones to the police that day.
I was not told that, no.
You're not aware if that happened or
not? I'm not aware of that happening, no.
You were in the, while you were in the process of obtaining surveillance footage, you were not aware of the identity of the shooter at Oxford High School?
Not immediately.
Okay. And at that point, you don't recall anyone at that point, meaning while you were reviewing the footage at the school, you don't recall anyone saying, oh, it's so-and-so, until at some point later?
Later, within, it was probably... I'd say 25, maybe 30 minutes, we were looking at the video and someone said his name.
Okay. So, and I'm not going to ask you to say his name. The judge has made orders regarding that. But it wasn't initially anyone at the school was like, we know who it was. It was this person. Is that accurate?
I believe the person was identified by the deputies that took him into custody. But that wasn't related to us. We were I was in the security room at whatever time it was. And we were just looking for the person that came out with the black zipped up hoodie on.
Okay. For Exhibit 61, and if you need me to pull the exhibit for you, I will.
Yes.
I'll tell you what it is. Exhibit 61 is a Facebook conversation between James Crumbly and his wife. Did you want to look at it?
Yes, please.
Okay. May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure. All right.
Come on with you. Do you recall reviewing that yesterday?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And that exchange is about James Crumbly's son.
Correct.
You don't know the context of the messages, is that fair?
The context of what was being said, the words speak for them, I don't understand.
Right, the words speak for themselves, right? You know what's on the page.
Correct.
You don't know anything beyond what's on that page.
That's correct.
You talked about texts. May I approach again, Your Honor, to get the exhibit?
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Margrasky. You talked yesterday about text messages between Mr. Crumbly's son and his friend.
Correct.
You talked about the amount of text messages that there were.
That's correct.
20,000 texts in 11 months, I believe, is what you said.
Yes.
Now, are you familiar with how often teenagers text each other?
I have 2 of my own, so yes.
You know that teenagers text a lot?
Yes, they do.
Young people text a lot?
I'm sorry, what?
Young people text
a lot? Yes.
You don't know whether or not 20,000 texts is an abnormal amount of texts between 2 teenage friends or if it's an abnormal amount. Is that fair?
No. I've done teenage cell phones before, and that 20,000 is a lot for that time span.
In April 4th of 2021... you identified a text message between Mr. Crumbly's son and his friend claiming that his dad told him, his dad being James Crumbly, told him to suck it up and gave him pills. Do you recall reviewing that text yesterday?
Yes.
Now, in that text, you don't know what Mr. Crumbly's son was talking about, that his dad told him to suck up. Is that fair?
Because I believe he told him that he was not feeling well, or if you have the exhibit, I can look at it. I thought there was more context to it prior to suck it up, but... Then Dole just handed him some pills.
Right. You don't know what the pills were?
I don't know.
Could have been Tylenol.
They talked about Xanax before James and his wife did.
Not in that communication, correct?
No.
The one on April 4th of 2021.
Correct.
There was also a talk about melatonin.
Yes, there was.
So it's fair to say that you don't know what necessarily was being discussed between Mr. Crumbly's son and his friend on April 4th of 2021.
Again, if I saw, I thought there was more context before the suck it up, but I don't know exactly what they were.
Let me see if I can pull the... I'll pull the exhibit and we'll come back to it.
Okay.
And the same thing on April 5th of 2021 with the friends. You don't know what the context of the conversation was. You just know what you're reading on a page. Is that fair?
What were they talking about on April 5th?
We'll pull that exhibit and I'll come back to it. I was going to do it on the screen, but it's not working.
You can do it on the screen if you want. This one was flashing, but we can try it again.
It's okay, Judge. Yeah. We'll move on.
I can probably see it from either one of these angles anyway.
You talked about in Exhibit 70 and 71, and I will pull those for you right now. Well, one is it's a placeholder because it was a video, if you recall.
Oh,
may I approach, Your Honor?
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome. Exhibit 70 and 71 were a video sent from Mr. Crumbly's son to his friend, correct?
Correct.
And that was a video at 9:31 p.m.
That's correct.
On August 19th of 2021.
Correct.
We saw the video yesterday. It was of Mr. Crumbly's son handling a firearm.
Correct.
You hear the clicking. You hear a clicking in the video, if you recall.
After you loaded the magazine into it, yes.
You don't hear any voices.
No.
No other sounds.
No.
In Exhibit 74, you identified that that was a GPS location showing that James Crumbly was at the home.
Correct.
At the time that this, or around the time that this video was taken.
That's correct.
Now, from the video that we saw, you don't know if James Crumbly is standing next to his son, correct?
No, I do not.
You don't know if he was standing across from his son, correct?
I do not.
You don't know if he was in a different room and had no idea that his son was handling the firearm, is that correct?
I can't say that because when you rack around into a gun, that slide going forward makes a loud noise. And in a small house, you'd probably hear it.
Probably, but you don't know.
For sure, with him, no, I don't. But it's likely.
And you don't know just by looking at that exhibit what the surrounding circumstances are of that video. Is that fair?
What was going on around it outside the video? No, I do not.
You know what that video shows.
Correct.
And that video shows Mr. Crumbly's son handling a firearm and loading a magazine into it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Exhibit 72 and 73 are also, if you'd like to look at them,
please.
There was also a text message between Mr. Crumbly's son and his friend. Again, it's another placeholder because it was a video. May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was a video sent to Mr. Crumbly's son's friend at 8/20/21.
Correct.
At approximately 12:30 a.m.
That's correct.
In the text, while the or after the video was being sent, Mr. Crumbly's son said to his friend that his dad left a gun out.
Correct.
You don't know if that's true. Is that fair?
I mean, I don't know why he would lie to his friend that he talks to all the time.
You don't know if it's true, correct?
From this, it doesn't say that it's true or not, but I don't know why he would lie.
The words on the page are the words on the page. Is that
that's
accurate?
That's correct.
You can't go back in time and get the answer, correct? You can't go back to August 20th of 2021 and figure out were you telling the truth that day?
Go back to that day? No. I mean,
correct.
You could ask the person that sent the text.
Right. Exhibit 76 shows that James Crumbly was at the home at that date and time. May I approach again, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Exhibit 76 is, again, another GPS location showing that James Crumbly was at the home on August 20th of 2021 at 12:30 a.m.
Correct.
And again, in the video that was shown, you can hear the clicking sound. I'm sorry, this was the loading of the magazine.
That's correct.
The
yes.
other one was something else.
And just, yes, recording it.
Exhibit 72 and 73 is Mr. Crumbly's son loading the magazine into the firearm?
Correct.
And you hear that?
Yes.
And you see it on the video?
Correct.
You can hear kind of like a whirring, maybe like a fan or something in the background, if you recall?
I don't recall that, but okay.
You don't recall hearing voices?
Anybody talking at the time?
Correct.
No.
No other sounds other than the loading of the magazine.
And the slide going forward.
And again, you don't know whether James Crumley was standing there or not?
Correct, I do not.
You don't know if James Crumley was in another room?
The GPS says he was in the
same
house.
At the residence, correct?
Yes.
You don't know if he was maybe standing outside? You don't know, is my point.
I don't, the video just limits to the gun, correct, but the GPS puts him at the house at 12:30 at night.
If you were to say, you know, well, this is what I think, and you said that similar to some questions a little bit earlier, while the sound of the slide moving forward is loud, and you would hear it in a house, that assumption that you're making, correct?
I've loaded a gun several times, and it does make a loud noise.
You don't know whether or not anyone is... I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's okay. You would know what's happening. If you have a house that's large on a second floor, then you probably wouldn't. But in a smaller house, it does... You have metal banging together. It makes a loud sound.
You don't know, based on those exhibits that have been admitted, whether or not James Crumley heard that sound?
Whether he heard it, no.
You don't know whether or not he was aware of it?
No.
You don't know if he was aware of it and standing right there?
Correct.
You don't know?
I know the GPS puts him at the house.
Exhibit 79 was a chain of text messages. May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Is a chain of text messages between James Crumley and his son's friend's father. Do you recall reviewing that yesterday?
Correct, yes.
James Crumley's son's friend's father.
Yes, okay. I want to, yep. Yes.
You reviewed the text during your investigation in this case?
Correct.
You look at them yesterday?
That's correct.
This is the friend that Mr. Crumley's son texted with so much, the 20,000 texts.
That is correct.
Mr. Crumley was checking in on his son's friend.
Yep.
Okay.
That's correct.
He was concerned because it had been brought to his attention by his son that he hadn't heard from his friend, if you recall.
Yes, correct.
If you recall from the text messages, the son's friend's father asked Mr. Crumley not to say anything about the whereabouts of his son.
Until he went to the hospital?
Correct.
Correct, yes.
And he said, wait and let's see how my son wants to handle it.
Correct.
Okay. In the conversation at that point between Mr. Crumley and his son's friend's father, there was no expression, if you recall from reviewing the exhibit, there was no expression of mutual concern about Mr. Crumley's son or sharing any information like, yeah, my son's been having a hard time. There was nothing like that in that exhibit. And you can look through the pages that you have.
No, there was not.
Okay. On November 30th of 2021, in that same text thread, the friend's father texted Mr. Crumley and said that he was praying that his son made it home okay.
On what, in here?
Yes, November 30th of 2021.
Correct, yes.
And that was after the shooting at the high school?
That's correct.
So this friend, the father of this friend that Mr. Crumley's son had texted with so much, 20,000 texts that they had talked about, his own son had mental health issues, we see from the text, even he did not suspect that Mr. Crumley's son could have been the person responsible.
So this speculation, as counsel pointed out, this witness can testify. Thank you.
May I approach?
Yes. Oh, I don't answer that.
Thank you. You talked a little bit yesterday about cache data. You said that cache data is saved after a person views something on their device?
Correct.
You went through exhibits 82 through 86. Which I can pull if you'd like, but I'll just remind you, they were photos of a screenshot that Mr. Crumley's son had taken of a screenshot of a handgun that was for sale.
Correct.
A 9mm handgun. That's and then the exhibits were also the data behind that showing that the images were stored in both Mr. Crumley's son's cache data and Mr. Crumley's cache data.
That's correct.
Did you want to review them again?
I would, please.
Okay. Yes. May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure.
This is 82 through 86.
Okay.
Do you want to look at them? Just in case you need them?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes, thank you.
So, the screenshot was sent by Mr. Crumley's son to Mr. Crumley.
Was sent to by?
Mr. Crumley's son to Mr. Crumley.
Correct, yes.
The screenshot itself was taken by Mr. Crumley's son.
Correct.
Both of them, it appears from these exhibits, deleted the screenshot from their messages.
Correct.
People delete messages, right?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Sure.
For any number of reasons.
Correct.
Not necessarily because you're trying to hide anything.
Correct.
In fact, there's also a way that you can delete the message and then also clear that cache so that whatever you're deleting is permanently erased from your phone, right?
It's possible, yes.
And if that happens, then you wouldn't have found anything in the cache data, correct?
Probably not, correct.
So it's fair to say that deleting a screenshot or a message is not necessarily, there's nothing wrong with it, right?
There's, again, speculation. Bless you. Speculations, that kind of question is for the jury to answer.
Well, Your Honor, what I'm asking is if just deleting a message is wrong.
Well, do you mean morally, legally, professionally, politically?
All of them?
He's here to testify as to what he was able to extract from devices.
Yeah, you'd be asking his opinion. So, wouldn't you be asking his opinion?
I mean, he said he himself deletes things, and he doesn't do it because he's doing anything wrong, trying to hide anything.
Right. I mean, the witness was responding to counsel's question in a conversational tone. He can't provide opinions on why somebody might delete things or why not. He can testify it was deleted. Thank you, Judge.
In this instance, you did not see that anyone attempted to clear the cache data or anything like that from what you have in front of you.
The fact that it's there tells me that it didn't happen.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Sure.
Thank you. We know that on June 26th of 2021, James Crumbly went to a firearm store where he bought a 6-hour 9mm handgun. And you talked a little bit about that yesterday, correct?
Correct.
November.
What did I say?
June.
I'm sorry, yeah. November 26th,
yeah,
2021.
Yeah.
There's been no dispute that James Crumbly bought a handgun on November 26th of 2021, to your knowledge.
Correct.
Exhibit 95 is an Instagram post made by Mr. Crumbly's son about the 6-hour handgun that was purchased by Mr. Crumbly earlier that day.
Correct.
Would you like to review Exhibit 95 again?
Please.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In that post, Mr. Crumbly's son claims that the 6-hour is his handgun.
In
the post made by Mr. Crumbly's son in Exhibit
95. Correct, yes. I didn't hear something, sorry.
That's okay. He posted photos?
Correct.
And again, from what you have in that exhibit, you don't know anything about what's going on outside of the frame of that photo other than what's in that photo. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you know that based on Exhibit 88, which is a GPS location, that Mr. Crumbly was at or near his house around the time that his son took and posted those photos. And if you'd like to see Exhibit 88, I can give it to you.
Please, I always, yes, thank you very
May
much.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you.
So, reviewing Exhibit 88, you would agree that that exhibit shows that Mr. Crumbly was at or near his home at the time that, and if you need 95 back, I can give it to you, at the time that the post was made.
That's correct.
May I approach, Your
Honor?
Exhibit 92 is Cellebrite data showing that Mr. Crumbly follows, Mr. Crumbly's social media account follows his son's social media account. Would you like to review that?
I'm good with that.
You're good with this?
Yes.
Okay. So you agree that that's what that shows?
Correct.
It doesn't show whether or not they interact. Exhibit 92 doesn't show whether or not they interact on social media. Is that accurate?
That particular note does not.
Correct. Exhibit 92 doesn't show whether or not Mr. Crumbly saw any of his son's social media posts. Is that correct?
It would not indicate that, no.
Exhibit 96 is a video that was found on Mr. Crumbly's son's phone on November 26, 2021 at 6:39 p.m. And again, it's a placeholder. But if you recall, it's a video of the phone camera looking down the barrel of a firearm.
Yes.
You do not see in that video, if you recall, you don't recall seeing a round in the chamber, correct?
You
didn't see
a
brass.
You saw the firing pin.
The firing pin, which means
down the barrel.
There's nothing there.
Correct.
You do not know from that video if Mr. Crumbly's son is holding the firearm in front of him with his camera, or if it's like this, or you don't know what's going on. You just know what that video shows, and it's the barrel of the firearm.
Correct.
Exhibit 98 is a GPS location showing that Mr. Crumbly was at the home at the time that this video was taken. Did you want to look at Exhibit 98?
No, I'm good. I remember that one.
And you would agree that Exhibit 98 shows that Mr. Crumbly was at the home?
Correct.
And again, you don't know whether Mr. Crumbly was aware that his son was handling the firearm this way, correct?
That's correct.
Exhibits 100 and 101 are similar photos. If you recall, they are social media posts by both Mr. Crumbly's son and Mr. Crumbly's wife. If you would like to review them?
Please.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure.
It's both 100 and 101.
You can continue to approach us.
Thank you, Your Honor.
It isn't intimidating about you, Mr. Crumbly.
Thank you, Your Honor. Okay. So those are posts by Mr. Crumbly's wife and his son, and they're shooting range targets.
Correct.
And it looks like they were shooting range targets that they used based on the posts.
Based on, yes.
There's nothing illegal or improper to your knowledge about taking your child to the shooting range, correct?
That's correct.
And letting them shoot at a target.
Correct.
There's nothing illegal or improper to your knowledge about posting photos of the target that you used.
Correct.
Exhibits 104 through 107 are from November 27th of 2021, showing that James Crumbly was doing DoorDash deliveries. Do you recall reviewing those?
Yes, I do.
Do you need to see them?
Just in case, yes, please.
Okay. Period of time.
Correct.
And we know that James Crumbly worked for DoorDash. We talked about that yesterday.
Correct.
It hasn't been disputed to your knowledge.
No.
DoorDash was his job at the time.
That's correct.
There's nothing wrong with working at DoorDash, correct?
No.
There's nothing wrong with leaving your 15-year-old son at home while you're working for DoorDash.
Correct.
In and of itself, there's nothing wrong with that.
Correct.
And when you were looking at exhibits yesterday, and just if you recall, you don't recall there being any posts about or exhibits about concerning behavior or concerning text messages or videos or anything like that during the hours from exhibits 104 to 107?
During this time, no.
Okay. You talked about the horse barn yesterday, if you recall.
Yes.
You talked about the messages between James Crumbly and his wife about the horse barn.
Correct.
In fact, you recalled that James Crumbly and his wife mentioned or talked about the horse barn 86 times in their messages that you reviewed.
Going to, yes, correct.
And you said specifically from January of 2021 through November of 2021, they had talked about going to the horse barn 86 times.
That's correct.
Now, if we do the math quickly, there's 333 days between January 1st of 2021 to November 30th of 2021, if you know. I don't know if you're, I'm not great at math. But
I don't know that.
Okay. So let's just assume that's the number we come up with. 86 out of 333 is 25.8%. Again, I'm not going to ask you to, I'm not going to hold you to the number.
Okay.
But assuming 86 is correct, assuming 333 is correct, that means that a quarter of the time they're discussing the horse barn.
And really didn't discuss much more other than going to work and stuff like that.
On November 28th of 2021, yesterday, you testified that Mr. Crumbly was away from the house for approximately 5 hours. There were screenshots or GPS locations. You remember talking about that yesterday?
What day was this?
November 28th of 2021.
Okay, yes.
There's nothing wrong with being away from home for 5 hours, correct?
Correct.
In and of itself, there's nothing wrong with that.
Correct.
Exhibit 115, and I am going to bring this up to you, is a Facebook thread between James Crumbly and his wife. On November 29th of 2021 from 8:23 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m.
Okay.
They are discussing issues with their horse.
Correct.
We talked about it yesterday. We also learned in that time between 8:23 a.m. and 1 o'clock p.m. that Pamela Fine from Oxford High School called Jennifer Crumbly.
Correct.
She left her a voicemail. Pamela Fine left Jennifer Crumbly a voicemail.
That's correct.
There was another exhibit showing that Jennifer Crumbly accessed that voicemail at approximately 11:49 a.m.
Correct.
In Exhibit 115, there's no discussion between James Crumbly and Jennifer Crumbly about that voicemail.
There was a, not in this right here, no, but there was a conversation of she where Jennifer asked James, did he tell you what happened at school today?
And I'm going to get to that in just a second. Okay. But in that thread, there isn't anything, especially around 11:49 or even before 1 o'clock p.m., where it's mentioned, I got a voicemail from the school, this is what it was about. Is that fair?
That's fair.
In fact, it wasn't until Exhibit 119 at approximately 3:19 p.m. that Jennifer Crumbly mentioned anything to James Crumbly about something going on with Ethan at school.
Correct.
And
can I ask you a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you turn off the microphone?
Their son talked about what happened at school.
Correct.
Now, there's an assumption that Mrs. Crumbly is asking Mr. Crumbly about the incident that led to the voicemail. Is that fair? There's an assumption.
Nothing else to base that on happened that was the school called them about.
And that's my point, right?
Correct.
And there was no conversation between James Crumbly and Jennifer Crumbly about that voicemail beyond what we see in that message, in the messages in 119, correct?
Correct.
Exhibit 131 is another Facebook thread between James and Jennifer Crumbly.
Thank you.
You're welcome. From November 30th of 2021. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to 122. You can keep 131 with you.
Okay.
Exhibit 122 is surveillance video of Mr. Crumbly dropping his son off at school.
Correct.
And then I believe you also testified that there was additional exhibit showing that Mr. Crumbly went to the horse barn that day?
Correct.
That would be November 30th of 2021?
That's correct.
He was waiting for a vet?
Correct.
And that was consistent with the conversation from the day before about one of the horses having some medical issues?
Correct.
So Exhibit 131, you see that Jennifer Crumbly sent James Crumbly a picture of the math assignment that was sent to her by the school.
Correct.
And we've talked about this math assignment, and I'm sure that we'll talk about it more, but there were two versions that were sent, correct?
Correct.
And in that thread, there were two versions that were sent, from what you can see.
Correct.
James obviously expressed some concern.
In one text, yes.
In fact, he said, "My God, WTF."
Correct.
And we don't have to say what that means, but WTF. Jennifer says that their son was upset, and she used the word, quote-unquote, distraught about the night before.
Correct.
James says in response that he talked about it, assuming he means the night before, with their son. Correct?
We talked about it. I'm sorry. What?
In referring to it, we can presume that they're talking about the night before, based on the response to Mrs. Crumbly's text. And if you don't want to presume that, you don't have to.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay.
I can't, yeah.
So, James Crumbly says, we talked about it this morning.
That's correct? What he said, yes.
Yes. There was no conversation after that about Mr. Crumbly saying, based on that conversation with his son, that he has concerns.
Correct.
In fact, I believe the next message is, did you talk to him?
That's correct.
Thank you. We know that on November 30th of 2021, James and Jennifer Crumbly went to Oxford High School.
That's correct.
They met at the school around 10:30 a.m.?
A little after that, but yes.
The prosecutor asked you if Mr. Crumbly went to the house before going to the school, and you said no.
Correct.
We know that Mr. Crumbly was at the horse barn. He left there and went directly to the school.
Correct.
And that was based on the exhibit that you looked at yesterday.
That's correct.
On his way there, he spoke to his wife.
Correct.
Mr. Crumbly and his wife met with Sean Hopkins at Oxford High School for approximately 13 minutes.
I think it was a little less than that, but yes.
Their son was in the meeting for about 12 of the 13 minutes?
Yeah, almost 12.
James left the school parking lot at 10:57 a.m.
Okay.
If you recall?
I don't recall the exact time he left, but sounds about right because they left the counselor's office before that.
You testified that at 11 a.m., Mr. Crumbly logged into his DoorDash app?
That's correct.
From the Meyer parking lot on Gray Road?
Yes.
That his first pickup and delivery was from 11 a.m. to 11:19 a.m., if you recall?
Sounds about right, yes, correct.
So he left the school and started working right away?
Correct.
Within 3 minutes. Is that fair?
Yes, correct.
The prosecutor asked you if he stopped by his house during that first DoorDash, and you said no?
That's correct.
To your knowledge, on November 30th of 2021, from 11 a.m. to 11:19 a.m., Mr. Crumbly didn't have any reason to stop by his house.
Justice,
that you know of. That you know of.
Justice.
If you know, do you know of any reason?
Was he told? I don't understand the question. I apologize.
No. Are you aware of any reason that Mr. Crumbly may have known that he needed to go to his house from between 11 to 11:19 on November 30th of 21?
Judge, I think perhaps the better objection would be calling for a legal conclusion, because that's central to the theme of the prosecution, that he did have reason to stop. That's what the jury's being asked then.
I just don't know how he would know that.
It's based upon his level of knowledge from the last months in the life, Judge. That's what the evidence is showing.
I can move on, Judge.
Thank you,
I just don't know how he would know that.
You identified Exhibit 147 as an email that was sent. Would you like to review it?
I believe it. That's fine. Thank you.
As an email that was sent from Oxford High School to James Crumbly.
Correct.
That was sent at sometime around 1 p.m.
1:09 p.m., but yes.
That was after, actually, the shooting had ended.
Correct.
In fact, you testified yesterday that the shooting was from 12:51 p.m. to 1300.
Yes, correct.
To 1 o'clock.
Correct, yes.
That email doesn't show whether or not Mr. Crumbly received it. Is that fair?
That right there doesn't tell me anything other than it was sent to him.
All that tells you is that there was an email sent from the high school to Mr. Crumbly.
Correct.
At that email address.
Correct.
And at that time.
Correct.
You know that from 12:33 p.m. to 1:01 p.m., Mr. Crumbly was on a different DoorDash delivery.
Correct.
You know that Exhibit 148 shows that Mr. Crumbly went to the Meyer on Ray Road.
At what time?
1:11 p.m.
Correct.
Did you want to look at the exhibit?
Nope.
Okay. So at 1:11 p.m., Mr. Crumbly was at the Meyer on Ray Road. You don't recall any exhibits yesterday showing that Mr. Crumbly was picking up a DoorDash order around 1:11 p.m., correct?
Correct.
You know that Mr. Crumbly called his son based on Exhibit 136, which is his phone log. Mr. Crumbly called his son at 1:13 p.m.?
Correct.
Would you like to look at the phone log to get the time?
That's about the right time.
Okay.
Correct, yes.
And you know that Mr. Crumbly remained at the Meyer, which was the reunification point after the Oxford High School shooting. Mr. Crumbly remained there from 1:11 p.m. to 1:17 p.m.
Correct.
So Mr. Crumbly called his son from the parking lot of the Meyer, which was the reunification point, at 1:13 p.m.
Correct.
He also called his son at 1:17 p.m.
Correct.
Which is right around the same time that he left the Meyer parking lot?
That's correct.
You know that there was a phone call, which was approximately less than 1 minute. And again, if you want to look at it, I can bring it
just to make sure. Yes, please.
Sure.
Thank you.
There was a phone call at approximately 1:17 p.m. 1:16 p.m. between Mr. Crumbly and his wife, which lasted less than 1 minute.
Correct.
Mr. Crumbly called his son at 1:17 p.m.
That's correct.
He left the Meyer at approximately 1:17 p.m.
That's correct.
Called his son again at 1:18 p.m.
That's correct.
And again at 1:18 p.m. There were two phone calls at 1:18 p.m., seconds apart.
Correct.
Neither of them were answered.
Correct.
You also know, based on your involvement in this case, that his son was already in custody at that point.
That's correct.
He'd been taken into custody at 1 o'clock?
Correct.
You know that, again, based on 136, Mr. Crumbly's wife called him after he'd left the Meyer parking lot?
At 1:19 p.m., is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Crumbly was home at approximately 1:20 p.m. based on your, based on the exhibits, if you recall?
Correct.
He was home while he was on the phone with his wife?
That's correct.
You know that during the time that he was at home, he called 911?
Correct.
He called 911 because he discovered that the Sig Sauer and the ammunition for the Sig Sauer were both missing.
Speculation as to why he called 911, Judge.
Oh, he said in the phone call why he called 911.
Well, I guess that's a different question. You don't know why he called 911, but you did hear him. You did hear the 911 call. That
correct.
That
yes.
In that 911 call, Mr. Crumbly told the dispatcher that he saw and heard the sirens, if you remember the call?
Correct.
He said that he went to the Meyer after hearing and seeing the sirens?
Correct.
That his son was a student in Oxford High School?
That's correct.
That he heard that there was a shooting?
Correct.
That he discovered that his gun was missing?
That's correct.
That he didn't know if his son took the gun?
Correct.
And that he was freaking out?
That's correct.
After that phone call to 911, you know that James Crumbly received a phone call from law enforcement and he and his wife went to the substation in Oxford.
Correct.
They returned home around 2:30 p.m.
Correct.
There was some indication and some questioning yesterday from the prosecution about the white paper that had changed hands between James and Jennifer Crumbly at the school.
Correct.
Remember that? And the prosecution asked you if there was any indication that James Crumbly had made phone calls to doctors, hospitals, or physicians, correct?
I remember that, correct.
To your knowledge, and if you don't know, it's okay to tell me you don't know if there was anything requiring James to make those phone calls, correct?
I know nothing about the meeting.
And you know that the meeting was at approximately, ended around, I think we said 10:53 a.m.?
Correct.
And the shooting occurred at 12:51 p.m.?
That's correct.
It was approximately 2 hours later. You also know that in those 2 hours, I'll withdraw that question. You testified about messages between Jennifer Crumbly and a person named Brian Malash.
Correct.
You have no idea whether Mr. Crumbly knew about those messages?
They were together at the time. Other than that, I don't know.
Okay. You don't know if Mr. Crumbly knew what Jennifer Crumbly was saying to Brian Malash?
I do not know.
You know that at some point, Mr. Crumbly's son's name was made public?
Correct.
And it was fairly shortly after the shooting occurred, if you recall.
I don't recall when it was.
Were you aware that Mr. Crumbly and his wife began receiving threats to their safety as a result of what their son did at the high school?
I know in some chat threads there was talk of that, yes.
Were you aware that Mr. Crumbly and his wife had been made aware of some of those threats?
Yes.
Were you aware that there were concerns for Mr. Crumbly and his wife's safety as a result of some of those threats?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I was aware. Who was aware
that there
this?
Were concerns for Mr. Crumbly and his wife's safety as a result of some of those threats?
I know they
received. I have to object as to the characterization of what a threat is and what a threat is not. It's, as we know, Judge, it's very subjective.
Okay, so maybe more specific.
I can move on, Your Honor. I was just my question was mainly if he knew that this occurred, and he said that he did hear something about some threats. I can move on from it, Your Honor. As a result of your involvement in this case, you were aware that Mr. Crumbly's son was criminally charged on December 1st of 2021?
That's correct.
That on December 2nd of 2021, there was an announcement from the prosecutor's office that Mr. Crumbly and his wife may be charged, if you recall the date.
I don't recall that.
On December 3rd, 2021, in the afternoon, that Mr. Crumbly and his wife were criminally charged for their son's actions, if you recall the date.
I'm sorry, I don't recall the dates all that happened.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Redirect.
Thank you, Judge. Let's see if I can get this to work.
I'm not positive it's going to work right here.
Okay, looks like it's working.
This keeps flashing the screen.
Can you see the other screens?
Yeah. I can see that fairly well, yes.
Okay.
If you can't see it, we can give you a copy of the exhibit. We're going to have someone look at that.
I have them printed if you need them.
That's all right. I can see
that. That's like flashing.
Yes.
Okay. May I judge?
Go ahead.
Sir, you were asked about the shooter and his friend in that conversation that we had. Do you recall those questions?
Yes.
Okay, and then yesterday we had a discussion about that, specifically the amount of text in that conversation, the content of the conversation.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Now, from November the 30th of 2021 up until the time that the shooter was arrested October the 30th of 21 to November the 30th of 21 when he was arrested, were there any responsive texts from the friend to the shooter?
No, there was not.
Okay. In that conversation, we talked about in April how the shooter expressed to that friend that his father for help.
Correct.
And you were asked about some context, and I think your answer was that there was more context to it, you just couldn't recall. So I'm going to show it to you. So we'll go through the entire exhibit. It's exhibit 67. This is the shooter. Like I hear people talking to me and see someone in the distance. That's April 4th of 21.
Correct.
And then right after the shooter wrote, I actually asked my dad to take the doctor yesterday, but he just gave me some pills and told me to, quote, suck it up.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And then he wrote, like, it's at the point that I'm asking to go to the doctor, and then my mom laughed when I told her.
That's correct.
Okay, the next text is April the 5th, just after midnight, but I'm having bad insomnia, RN. What does RN mean?
Right now, if you
know. Okay, right now. And paranoia.
Correct.
I need help. I was thinking I'd call 911 so I could go to the hospital.
That's correct.
Then he wrote, but then my parents would be really pissed. That's April 5th, 21 at 12:12 in the morning.
That's correct.
I'm going to ask my parents who the doctors tomorrow or Tuesday again. That's April 5th, 21, 12:38 a.m.
Correct.
And then, but this time I'm going to tell them about the voices. April 5th, 21 at 12:38 a.m. And then the last text is, like I am mentally and physically dying. That's April the 5th, 21 at 12:39 in the morning.
That's correct.
Okay, so that's in the same conversation.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Is that the context you're referring to?
Yes, I do remember that now, yes. That's okay. What I was referring to.
And in this conversation, you were, you're saying, this is in August, between the shooter and his friend, you were asked about these videos. I'm going to play this one. This is August 20th at 12:30 in the morning. Okay, is that the noise you're referring to? The noise that it makes when you...
Yeah, the metal fire? Slamming together and... Putting the magazine and slamming it on the table.
Now you were asked about the horse barn, and I'm just going to use counsel's math here. So if that math is correct, that means 25% of all, so a quarter of the year, they were discussing meeting at the barn?
Correct.
Okay. Any indication in any of those conversations that they were taking their son with them?
No. There was not.
Now I want to ask you about
Exhibit 130. And you were asking questions about November the 30th, 2021, when they were called to the school. So we talked yesterday about James when he started door dashing on November the 30th. You recall that?
Yes.
Okay. So earlier in the morning, just to get the timeline correct, we had 7:46 a.m. James Crumley dropped his son off at Oxford High School.
That's correct.
He's back at home at 8:04 a.m.
Correct.
And then he's at the barn after that.
Correct.
Okay. And we went through that text, that Facebook conversation between James and Jennifer Crumley when she showed him this picture, exhibit one. This is exhibit 128. And I'm going to go to the original one as well, which is 130. So we saw that Facebook conversation November the 30th, approximately 9:30 in the morning, when Jennifer Crumley sent this to James Crumley.
Correct.
Okay. So based upon the location history and what you were able to determine, he was at the barn at that point?
That's correct.
Okay, so he had not checked in for the day and began working that day?
Correct.
Okay. So it was not until after he saw this, and that's when he signed on to DoorDash?
After the meeting.
Okay. So you were asked, did he have any reason to stop home? But I want to talk about after he saw this, if he ever stopped home at all. Okay?
Okay.
So November 30th, 2021, at 11 a.m., that's when he first signed on to accept his first order for DoorDash. Is that right?
That is about right, yes.
Okay. And we went through some of those maps. We went through a little bit quickly yesterday. So I want to make sure that we're on the same page. When he was accepting these orders and making deliveries, it wasn't outside of Oakland County, was it?
No, it was not.
In fact, where was it?
All local and within Oxford.
Within Oxford. Okay. And he actually drove by his house at least four times from the point that he saw this to the point the shooting started.
That's correct.
And never once did he stop home.
No, he did not.
Now, yesterday you mentioned how you responded to the scene and you went to the Meijer first.
Yes.
Okay. And that's the Meijer that James Crumley was at when he received the alert of the active shooting at Oxford High School.
That's correct.
Okay. And you were helping parents find their kids when you were there?
Yes.
You talked a little bit about the school buses and what you saw. How many parents were there?
Dozens of just standing around in the cold.
Were more coming when you went to school?
Yes, cars kept on coming.
And based upon what we know from the timeline you were able to put together with the data locations, we know that 1:10 p.m. James Crumley got the email. We know with a certainty that he was at the Meijer parking lot at least by 1:11.
Correct.
He made phone calls in that period of time, and he didn't leave, and he left at 1:17 p.m. So he was in the parking lot where everybody else went to for at least 6 minutes, and then he went home.
Correct.
Okay. And he got home at 1:20 p.m.
Correct.
He was on the phone with his wife for a 10-minute phone call, we said.
Correct.
Okay. And it wasn't for another 14 minutes that he called 911.
Correct.
And it wasn't just parents at that Meijer parking lot. There were students there as well.
Hundreds of them, yes.
Okay. You know, there's 1,700 students at Oxford High School?
I did not know that, but it's a big school.
From what you saw there, the scene that you saw when you pulled up in that white minivan you told us about, and you saw the school buses with kids looking for parents.
Your Honor, I'm going to object. The prosecution's testifying.
I'll get to the question, Judge.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Please.
Did it seem like it was that number of students at Oxford High School? Paint us the picture of what you saw when you got there.
Again,
I would also object to relevance about what he saw when he got to the Meijer, Your Honor.
It's important because counsel made a point in her cross-examination to suggest that there's no reason for James Crumley to go home. And I think this witness has established yesterday and today that James Crumley was actually at the location where everybody else was going to. So it's important for the jury to understand what he was observing when he sped from Pontiac to that location.
Your Honor, I don't understand what Mr. Wagorowski observed at the Meijer is relevant to whether or not James Crumley felt that he needed to go home. I don't know how the two are connected, Your Honor.
I'm at a loss myself. Maybe I'm missing something.
Okay. Did all the other parents you saw, did they leave or did they stay?
They stayed.
Thank you. Nothing further.
All right, you can step down here.
Your Honor, very brief recross.
Okay.
Very brief. Thank you.
All right.
I believe I only have three questions.
Okay.
Four. Can I get my exhibit back? Thank you. In April of 21, you testified about Mr. Crumbly's son telling his friend, I'm going to ask my parents to go to the doctor, right?
Correct.
You don't know what doctor that was?
He was talking about hearing voices in the distance and stuff like that, but...
You don't know what doctor that was. Is that accurate?
Correct.
In reviewing the exhibit that we have, we don't know what doctor he was asking to see.
From the word prior to that, where he's hearing voices and he feels like he's dying inside, I do not know the doctor.
You don't know? You don't know if he ever did ask?
He mentioned it in a couple different conversations that he was going to try to ask.
Going to try. You don't know if he ever did?
I do not.
One moment, please. Thank you. No further questions, Your
Honor. Judge, I just have to redirect because I have to correct something that was just said in that exhibit. Just one question on that April.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I mean, I'm sure he could be recalled, so. I'm sure he'd be happy not to, so.
Okay, so we went, this exhibit 67, we went through this part like I hear people talking to me. The next slide. I actually asked my dad to take to the doctor yesterday.
Correct, yes.
Okay, is that your recollection?
Yes,
well? Okay.
Correct.
Thank you, Judge.
One question. I'm sure you know what it is. You don't know what doctor that was, right?
Other than the context of the information prior to that.
That's asked and answered,
Judge.
Yeah,
he asked and answered. He said he doesn't know.
Thanks, Judge.
Okay, so I'm going to let you step down. And your excuse.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
I'm going to ask both the lawyers, if there's a witness who's excused and for some reason you think they might be recalled, I need to know if they were not permitted to sit in the courtroom, all right?
Yes, sir.
If someone's excused, I presume that they're able to sit in the courtroom, so if there's a reason why not, just let me know. Okay.
I suppose there is always a possibility with a computer crimes expert for rebuttal, so we'll have Mr. Wagronski exit.
Okay.
I think he has.
Okay. All right. Everybody good?
May I proceed next, please?
Sure.
Okay. Mr. Robert Dallas?
Raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm the testimony about today? Is it true to help you
guys? I do.
Right. Would you pull your computer? Got a second. State your name for reference
while
your first and last name.
Robert F. Kotelis, Jr., Robert Kotelis.
Right, go ahead, prosecutor.
Okay. I'm sorry, may I proceed?
Sure.
Thank you.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
If you could, please tell us where you work.
I work for the Oakland County Sheriff's Office in the forensic laboratory there.
Okay. And how long have you been with the Oakland County Sheriff's Office?
I'm in my 17th year.
And prior to working with the Oakland County Sheriff's Office, did you work in law enforcement?
Yes, I did.
And what did you do and where did you work?
I worked for the city of Pontiac at the police department, and where I was a crime scene investigator there for almost 9 years.
Okay. So also law enforcement, you've been involved over 25 years?
It'll be 25 years on March 17th of this year.
Okay. And what is your specific role right now with the sheriff's office?
I'm a latent print supervisor along with the crime scene supervisor for crime scenes out in the field.
Okay. And tell us specifically about crime scene supervision. What does that mean?
Well, I run a unit of, I have six employees, including myself, that respond to crime scenes when called upon to do an investigation out in the field. for identification of evidence, documentation, preservation, and collection of evidence to be used to help figure out what happened at crime scenes.
Okay. So you said when called upon, is it every crime scene that you and your team are called out, or does it just depend on the circumstances?
Typically, for the crime scene unit to be called out, it has to be of a major crime or of a heinous nature, typically murders and maybe sexual assaults that are covered that would need to be processed at a higher level than other evidence technicians that I have on the road.
Okay. So how often would you or your team be called out, let's say, on a weekly basis?
Right now, our average is probably twice a month. So, you know, thankfully, we don't have a murder happening every day in the county of Oakland. So major crimes that we are doing are probably a couple a month. Sometimes it may be more, sometimes it may be less. But right now, statistically, we're about two times a month.
Okay. Now, prior to joining the sheriff's office, did you have the opportunity to attend an institute of higher learning?
Yes, I have a forensic science degree. From Michigan State University, and I've taken continuing education classes ever since then upon my employment in 1999.
So when you say continuing education, is this a field that's evolving?
Every day.
Okay, and then do you have training to evolve along with it?
Yes, there is a yearly conference that I'm a member of, the IEI, which is a conference and a huge body of people that we get together and talk about technology and how everything advances in not only latent prints but crime scene investigations to make sure that we kind of stay up with the new technology and that we're utilizing that technology to assist in crime scene processing.
Now, how often would you say in your career you've processed a crime scene?
Oh man, I'd have to say in the thousands.
Now, when I say process a crime scene, I guess that suggests an answer there. Is there a specific process that you go through when you're reviewing the crime scene?
There's definitely a standard as far as the basics, I would say. Upon arrival to a crime scene, you're going to do an assessment, maybe what we call a walkthrough. You're going to assess what you actually have at that crime scene, trying to identify anything that may be important to that case. And there's certain documentation that can be done via notes, photographs, possibly a sketch or measurements, or as we've progressed with technology, we have a 3D scanner that we can use us in documenting our crime scenes, along with collection of evidence at a crime scene. Now, there's additional things that can be done, but it doesn't happen on every case, but those are the basics that would most likely be performed on every crime scene that we would go on.
Okay. Now, prior to undergoing that, is there a conversation that you or a member of your team would have with a detective in charge?
Absolutely, with the OIC, so that way we would know what we're kind of looking for. If we know the cause of this crime scene, if it's a homicide, if it's a stabbing, we're looking for a knife, if it's a shooting, we're looking for firearms evidence, so that we can kind of get an idea. Now, if you find something that may be different, then we would get with that OIC or that detective and let them know of our findings that we on our initial walkthrough.
Okay. I'd like to direct your attention now to November the 30th of 2021. Do you remember that day?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Were you working that day?
Yes, I was.
In what capacity were you working?
It was during day shift, and so I was working in the actual laboratory that day.
Okay. And at that point, were you the crime scene supervisor?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And were you the individual on call if anything should happen that day?
Yes, I was.
Okay. So, were you called in to process the crime scene at Oxford High School November 30th, 2021?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Did you actually go to that location?
Yes, I did.
Do you recall approximately when you arrived there?
It was 2:40 in the afternoon. I received the call at 1:15. And by the time I assembled my team and grabbed our resources, it was 2:40 before I got up to the actual high school.
Okay, so that was after the scene was cleared, is that right?
At the beginning stages of being cleared.
Okay. Now, I'd like to talk to you about your specific process and your role when you arrived at Oxford High School November the 30th of 2021.
Okay.
All right, so you arrived there about 2:40, you said, with your team?
Correct.
Okay, and tell us, please, what's the first thing you did when you arrived?
Waited for guidance on what was going to be done first. So the first information was that I needed to collect a firearm that was the result of what had taken place at the high school.
Okay. And did you do that?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And tell us how that occurred, please.
The firearm was located within a garbage can, a small waste paper basket garbage can that was placed there by a deputy that had collected the item from the individual. So I viewed it, photographed it, and then collected it at that time.
Okay. And that firearm, after it was collected, was taken to the forensic laboratory at the Oakland County Sheriff's Office. May I approach that? This has been admitted, People's 28. This is forensic laboratory report, request number 6. Sir, just to confirm, that was authored by Mr. Robert Charlton from the Sheriff's Office.
I'm gonna object. These are leading questions. He can review the exhibit and testify about the exhibit, Your Honor.
It's already been admitted.
Well, yeah, the exhibit's admitted. She wasn't objecting to the exhibit. She was objecting to the leading question.
That's fine. Was that weapon confirmed to be the murder weapon?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And is that reflected in that report?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. Now, after you collected the weapon, that's reflected in that forensic laboratory report right there. What did you do next?
Waited for the scene to be cleared. There was intel still being obtained by the investigators on scene and other sites. So it was several hours before me and my team actually got into the high school to see what I actually had or what we actually had as far as for crime scene processing.
Okay. Now, in this particular scene, at this time, November the 30th, were you made aware of the path that the shooter took throughout the high school?
I was given a general direction, and then the scene was contained to one wing of the high school.
Okay, and do you recall the number or the name of that wing?
It was the 200 wing of the high school.
And when you process a scene, do you also author a report?
Yes, I do.
May I approach the witness?
Sure.
This is Exhibit 14.
Thank you.
Sir, take a look at that and tell me if you recognize it.
Yes, I do.
Okay. And what is it that I just handed you?
This is my 5-page crime scene report that I prepared at a later date after the crime scene processing of my findings that I had documented at the crime scene on November 30th.
Okay. So that's already been admitted into evidence. That's Exhibit 14. But so the jury's aware, does that fairly accurately depict what you observed and what you processed and collected that day?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Did you obtain a map to help you with the processing of the scene?
Yes, I did. I call maybe a blueprint or a schematic of the overall diagram of the entire school.
Okay. And after you obtain that, do you make notations on that?
Yes. There was a couple of us that worked on the actual schematic of the location of the evidence and the victims within the high school.
I'm going to show you the approach to that screen on. You may have to look at...
I can see this.
You can see them? Okay, great.
That's okay.
So I'm showing you what's been in this People's 15. Sir, do you recognize this?
Yes, I do.
And how so?
This is a schematic drawing that was prepared by the school or some other agency as far as for the school layout. And once again, this is the schematic that was used to place the piece of evidence on where they were located within the school outside of classrooms and where the victims were located within the school.
Okay. These notations were made by lab personnel?
Yes, it was. There's some by myself, and there's also by Rob Charlton, who works in the firearms unit, that's also a crime scene investigator with me.
So what did these notations signify?
There's numbers that are circled that would also coincide with the placards that were placed next to the piece of evidence within the crime scene for documentation purposes.
Okay, when you say placard, we're going to go through some pictures soon, but if you see a yellow placard with a number, that's what you're referring to?
That is correct.
And why is that done?
It's used mainly for photographic reasons, but also helps us to keep straight each piece of evidence that was collected, given a location of where it was within that crime scene.
Okay, and photographs were taken in this situation?
Yes, they were.
Okay. Now I'm going to go through, okay, this is 15, and you said it was the 200 hallway? That was the wing the shooting was contained to?
That is correct.
Okay, so we see numbers, not the notations from the crime lab, but numbers of classrooms here. So 258, is that, that's the number of a classroom?
That is correct.
Okay. And then to the far right, it goes to approximately 214, 213, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. So we'll go one portion at a time here.
Okay.
Okay, so this is a zoomed in version of Exhibit 15. What does this depict?
This is an area outside of 258 and 256 where two of the victims were found. It contained a large amount of evidence. And then you can start to see where it turns to the north, which would be to the right of this photograph. That would work your way up to the north, which is the remainder of the 200 wing that contained more evidence outside the rooms from 249 all the way down to 213.
Okay. So in the course of your investigation, did you come to learn what bathroom the shooter walked out of directly before the shooting?
Sorry. Yes, I was given the information that it was found just west of room 258.
So that would be this bathroom here that's highlighted?
That is correct.
Okay. So specifically now from what you recovered from the bathroom in this shorter wing of the 200 hallway, I'm going to take you through the path the shooter took with these pictures. Judge, some of these, two of these pictures have images that I'd ask the court to instruct the media not to film.
Your Honor, I'm not going to object to that. I am going to just indicate for the record, I believe that it's Exhibit 17 and Exhibit 26 that I will be objecting to, renewing objections that I made previously on the record to those two photographs.
Okay.
Is that correct, Mr. Beast?
That's both of those things are correct, and I did want the court to know that we did speak with the victims prior to the trials, and they understand.
Okay, so you're right now presenting Exhibit number 17?
First it'll be Exhibit 16, but then it's Exhibit 17 after that.
Okay, so there, both of those images cannot be shown
correct
to the press. And are the victims who are here familiar with what those photos contain?
Yes, Judge.
So they're welcome to exit if they feel the need, right?
Thank you, Judge.
Okay. So you guys get it, right?
Which two?
The next two, 16 and 17.
After this?
Oh, yeah. I'll make sure before I display it on the screen to let the court know.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll start with the bathroom next to 258. That's Exhibit 16 here. And what does this photograph depict?
This is in the stall within the bathroom, which would be found just west of room 258, that contained a red backpack and miscellaneous items such as electronic equipment, books, journals, there's a Gatorade bottle, amongst other miscellaneous items.
Okay, so all of that was collected as evidence?
That is correct.
Okay. Judge, the next photograph is Exhibit 17. I asked the media not to film this.
Yes, could you refrain from that?
I'm going to excuse the witness.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's filming, you're filming the witness.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. This is Exhibit 17. What are we looking at here?
This is a photograph taken outside of that bathroom that I just spoke of. This photograph is taken from the west to the east, showing the hallway that would be found just south of rooms 258 and 256. And you can start to see the yellow placards that I spoke of to depict the evidence that was found in that hallway area, along with one of the victims that's found in the middle of this photograph, but on the right-hand side of the hallway when you're looking east.
So that's Hannah St. Juliana, and then the other victim is Madison Baldwin, is that correct?
That is correct. It's hard to see on this photograph because it's far away, but it would be on the left-hand side of the hallway, further east as you move down the hallway.
Okay. Sir, tell us what you recovered from this portion of the 200 hallway.
There were several fire cartridge cases. There were 14 found, 14 fire cartridge cases found in this portion of the hallway, along with several fired bullets and bullet fragments along this hallway area that were found in several areas of the hallway.
What's a cartridge case?
A cartridge case is the portion of a bullet that actually holds the bullet itself. And in a semi-automatic weapon, it will eject from the side of the weapon. So the bullet will go through the barrel portion or the end of the firearm. And the fire cartridge case will then eject more than likely out the right-hand side, depending on the, which firearm we're talking about. About 99% of semi-automatic weapons will eject to the right. So the bullet will go out the barrel, and the fired cartridge case that held that bullet portion will eject to the right-hand side of that weapon.
Okay. So in order for it to be a fired cartridge case, that would have to mean that the gun was actually fired.
That is correct.
Okay. So with 14 fired cartridge cases, that would indicate that the gun was shot 14 times in this portion of the hallway?
That is correct.
Now, continuing down the shooter's path, when I ask you what happened, or what you located past rooms 256 as the hallway curves to 249. So this is room 258 on the left, next to that is room 256, and as it curves, it's 249. Is that your recollection?
That is correct.
Okay. This is People's Exhibit 18, so this is further down the same portion of the 200 hallway?
That is correct. It's just past the second victim on the left-hand side.
All right. Tell us what was located here.
There was more fired bullets and fired cartridge cases, along with a empty gun magazine that was located just around the corner from this evidence here.
Okay. Now, as that corner turns down the 200 hallway, this is People's Exhibit 19. I should say for the record, all of these have been admitted. Counsel did state her objections on the record, but this court ruled upon.
Yes.
Thank you, Judge.
Correct.
This is Exhibit 19. What are we looking at here?
This is now a photograph taken from the south to the north as we're moving, I would say, down in the numbers, but it's up as far as, like, if you're thinking about going north, down the 200 wings. So you're moving away from that bathroom where everything may have started. And this is, once again, indicating the evidence that was located from room 249 to 213, which ended up containing 18 more fired cartridge cases in this area.
Okay. So we had 14 in the shorter portion of the 200 hallway and 18 from room 249 to 213 down this long hallway?
That is correct.
Okay. And again, that means the firearm was fired 18 more times there, at least what you recovered?
That is correct.
This is Exhibit 20, specifically Placard 35. What's that?
So Placard 35, or number 35, is the firearms magazine that I spoke of that was found in the hallway there.
Okay. Now, up and down this portion of the hallway specifically, did you find evidence that the shooter fired directly into classrooms as well?
Yes, there were several classrooms that were found to be fired into.
Okay. This is Exhibit 21, depicting classroom 247. First of all, what's that rod that we're looking at?
So it's what we'll consider what we call a trajectory rod to show the path of the bullet that was fired at that location. So it's just shown for kind of demonstrative purposes that you can see where that bullet actually traveled into that room.
Okay, so this indicates to us that the firearm, the gun was shot directly into room 247.
That is correct, right through the door trim there.
This is Exhibit 22. This is depicting classroom 244. What do we see here?
Once again, a trajectory rod was inserted into the window portion. It got shattered, but it still stayed intact. But you can see the trajectory rod showing where the bullet passed through the window that was fired in room 244.
And this is Exhibit 12. It's room 224. What do we see here?
You can see the room, the door to the room. There are three trajectory rods that were placed in it to show that there was three shots that were fired into room 224.
Okay. This is Exhibit 10. This is also room 224, but with the door open?
That is correct. And you can see on the inside of the door, it's just the continuation of that trajectory rod to show that those shots were fired into that room.
And we have Ms. Darnell, Molly Darnell, testified yesterday. This was her classroom. This is what you refer to in the window here?
That is correct.
Okay. And then the file cabinet?
Yes, there was, I would say in the window is what we call a perforation. So one of the bullets passed through the door and then went through the window that was never found because it went out into the exterior of the school. There was a what we call a ricochet that was found in the file cabinet, which is right there in the middle that the prosecutor is highlighting. There was also what we call another ricochet that hit the chair, the backing of the chair. And then eventually a fired bullet was found embedded in a book that was found on the bookshelf behind the teacher's desk.
Okay, thank you. And that's room 224. Here's exhibit 23. This is classroom 223. We have a side-by-side view of this. What do we see here?
Once again, this is showing how a bullet would have struck the door. This actual impression shows that the bullet hit something additional prior to hitting this door, so it's what we call a tumbling bullet. So instead of being like a round impression or a pattern where a bullet would be circular, the bullet has now changed its path and it's tumbling. So now it hit it kind of going sideways. And that's depicted on the right-hand side there that you can see the sticker that was placed below it.
Here's exhibit 24. This is classroom 220. What do we see here?
Once again, you can see there's a trajectory rod and the outside of the door showing the path of travel that the bullet was fired into room 220.
And finally, exhibit 25. This is classroom 215. What do we see here?
Once again, these are trajectory rods. They're just a different color because we ran out of pink. But we're on to orange trajectory rods that are fired into the window outside of room 215, showing that the bullets were fired from the outside to the inside of that room.
Okay, thank you, sir. Now, did you come to learn that once the shooter reached rooms 213, 214, that he backtracked down the 200 hallway?
I was told that information.
Okay. Sir, did you process the men's bathroom in the 200 hallway that was across from classroom 233?
Yes, I believe it was either 233 or 231. It was in that same general area.
The camera person is asking when they can resume.
After the next picture, Judge. Okay. Okay. This is exhibit 26. Sir, what do we see here?
This is a photograph taken outside of that bathroom that we're talking of, outside or across from 231. You can start to see inside the bathroom there's a black backpack. Along with there's a, I believe it's a live round or a cartridge, as we call it, just found outside of the bathroom. And then you can start to see that there's a large pool of blood inside of that bathroom area. And this is just the entrance to the bathroom itself from the exterior of the hallway.
And did you come to learn this is where Justin Schilling was killed?
Yes, I was.
Did you also recover a fired shell or fired cartridge in this area as well?
Yes, a fired cartridge case was located in this bathroom.
Is that included in the count of 18 you described earlier?
Yes, it is.
Sir, you mentioned earlier the firearm was recovered. This is exhibit 27. Is this a photograph right outside of that bathroom that we just saw?
Yes, it was not taken by me because the firearm had been collected by the on-scene deputies when the suspect was apprehended.
Okay. But that is the firearm that you collected?
That is correct.
And it's a 6-hour, 9mm handgun?
Correct.
Now, based upon your crime scene investigation, how many times did the shooter fire that weapon inside Oxford High School on November the 30th?
32 times.
And how many unfired rounds, how many bullets were recovered, either from that magazine or elsewhere?
18.
So a total of 50 rounds of 9mm ammunition was taken to Oxford High School?
That is correct.
Thank you. I have nothing further, Judge.
Should I give them a break right now? Does that make sense to you? No. Should I ask them a break?
Yes.
What's that?
Either or. I mean, we'll need a longer break to fix the monitor as well, Judge. I don't know how long cross will take this witness.
Might no make cross, sense.
No cross, Your Honor.
Oh, okay. Do we ask someone about the monitor? Okay. I'm going to give you about a 10-minute break. I always say that, and then, you know, I go back there and the fire is erupt. So we're going to need a moment to fix this monitor so that the witness can see it. It's kind of flashing. It's distracting. So, but someone will be right here. So we're going to give you about a 10-minute break, all right? All right, you can step down and get excused.
All rise for the jury.
Take them down. You can be seated. Who's the next witness?
Yeah, I'll check. We're moving faster than I had anticipated, Judge. We'll have to see if she's here, but it would be Miss Cammie Bath.
Okay.
She's going to go.
Courtroom coverage in the trial of James Crumbly from the Hidden Killers podcast from True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand-new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand-new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.